military initially, at least at Fort Drum, where we were most involved, upstate New York, it's a very active combat base, the attitude of the military there was, this isn't really a problem. They don't, you know, combat-hardened leaders don't really think mental health is an issue. Their phrase they like to use is, soldier, suck it up and drive on. That's one of their favorite phrases. Soldiers can't sleep at night. He's in stages of crying. He's breaking down. He's drinking a fifth of whiskey to try to sleep. They'll say to him, suck it up, soldier. What's the matter with you? You weak? You a weakling? We're soldiers. You do your job. You do what you're told. So that's there was a lot of denial.
When I was in the Army before I got out, at one point I was facing a year because of going AWOL, because of my mental illness, because of the anxiety, the stress level, the depression, the bipolar, you know, me not feeling comfortable around a lot of people.
Our soldiers who have come back from the war, maybe they've served one or two deployments, maybe 20 up to 24 to 30 months in combat in Iraq and or Afghanistan. They come back, they can't sleep, they can't function, they have a two-week leave. They'll send them home in the middle of a tour for 2 weeks. Sleep in your own bed. Eat mama's cooking. Eat your wife's cooking. See the kids. Chuck them under the chin. Watch TV. Have fun. Then, next Sunday, you go back. Take you down to Fort Hood. Put you on another plane. Back to Afghan. Get off. Send you right out to the unit. Another 6 months. That's very, very difficult for a lot of people to handle. And so people sometimes just won't do it. They'll say, I can't go back. I can't go back into that environment. I know too much now. It's too disturbing. I'm not going to go. So they go AWOL. We represented Camilla Mejia, who was the first Iraq War veteran to refuse to return to Iraq. And we took his case before the press in Boston, I remember. We had a very, very strong media turnout. Network, New York Times, Wires, everybody was there. It was great. He went back to Fort Stewart. He was put on trial, court-martial. We raised a Nuremberg defense. We said he had a duty not to continue to serve, that there were war crimes. The war itself was illegal to begin with, and secondly, the way the war was being conducted violated the rules of land warfare. There are laws which restrict and control the way the military is supposed to function. Those laws mostly, many were promulgated after World War II in response to the Nazi conduct of World War II. Some of it. All right. So we said these are all issues that Camilla was driven by, he was aware of, he had a duty not to return and conform. He had a duty to resist that behavior. Judge wouldn't allow most of the evidence in. The jury was the career officers. They convicted him. They gave him the maximum sentence of a year. And he went and he served 9 months in prison, actually.
And I found that I could no longer use the old excuses that I had used to go to a war that I had opposed from the beginning, that I had been in the military too long, that I had an impeccable career, the fear of being judged by my peers, the fear of going to jail. I realized that the damage that we were inflicting to the Iraqi people and to ourselves and our families was way too much for me to continue relying on it as a justification to participate in war. And I chose not to go back to the war.
So our primary goal is not getting people out of the military, because we don't regard the military ipso facto as something that's evil and bad. And if I might add, that of course allows us to relate and talk to and engage with a lot of soldiers and veterans who had the same view of it. I first heard of Joy Banker through a lawyer that we work with in Boston, who's a civilian defense attorney. And he had been contacted by the family, I would say, back in January. And he wanted to know if we could help the guy. The family had no money for legal fees. And I said we would do what we could. And so I met, I had long discussions with the family on the phone and also with Joey, and got a sense of his problem. I think his case is particularly outrageous.
I got in touch with a lawyer, Todd Ensign, and he was a really big help in with my situation, and pretty much told me that, I was in the wrong by going AWOL, but with my situation and at the stage I was at and how long I had been there, at that point, you know, they're pretty much in the wrong, because that's just somebody with my condition. You don't just let sit there and not tell them nothing for months on end. And I'm also worrying about my newborn baby, my fiance.
I believe it was Todd that finally let the doctor, the Army know, the captain, that Joey has a serious problem. I have records here as a grown-up child of medicine, the institution he's been into. That's when they send him over to the Cimarron Hospital, mental health, for 60 days to get him back on his medicine.
I haven't talked to Todd yet, though.
Yeah, I talked to
A lot of fear came down, like, you know, hey, I was already sitting there for months on end, and they're telling me, hey, you're going home soon. And then you wake up with a phone call that, you know, hey, you could potentially be facing a year now with these charges.
And according to the captain, he told me he was charging him with desertion during war because it was over 30 days. Within 30 days is AWOL. Usually most people are back in 7. So they made it really tough on Joey being gone for 13 months. They stopped his pay.
Shouldn't get paid, but.
They got him, you know, in the Army. They wanted him to stay there. They wanted to send him back over. They wanted to send him to Afghanistan. I mean, they just rolled on him hard. And I had to get him out of there because he was not getting no medicine. And that's when we got involved with Todd.
That he was told by the recruiter that if he wanted to qualify for enlistment in the Army, he should stop taking medications, which he's been taking since he was 14 years old, for a diagnosed bipolar condition. Bipolarity is a very serious and usually lifelong condition, which often has very tragic result, suicide. This is true, that his recruiter encouraged him not to stay on these drugs, because if he did, when he went to the recruiting center, the tests they do there would immediately identify these drugs, and that would disqualify him.
I told him about my record, my mental record, my legal record. My legal record, they actually ran checks on and got waivers for. My tattoos, they got waivers for. And when it came to my mental record, it was kind of pushed under the rug. Just like, hey, let's not mention it, because that'll disqualify you from getting in. And at that time, I was off my medication. You know, I was in a, it's what I call like a higher moment, like being bipolar. You go through your ups and downs. And I was in like one of them really, like nothing can stop me kind of moods, and excited, stopped taking my meds. And we just kept going through. We were doing all the paperwork to get me in, and everything that had to do, any question about any medical or mental history, have I ever seen a counselor, have I ever been on medication, have I ever been diagnosed with anything? And, you know, I was just told to say no, all the way down the list if I wanted to get in.
So Joey's told us that he stopped taking the drugs, which are powerful stabilizers, so that he could qualify for military duty. And to me, that is the grossest malpractice. If that recruiter was guilty of that, that's gross malpractice.
But I let the recruiter know that, you know, I talked to him on the side about how Joey's condition and two suicide attempts, that, you know, I was against him talking Joey into it. But he was here daily, early in the morning, take him to breakfast, talk to him, pick him up, take him here.
When Joey was in Tryon, can I just jump? When Joey was in Tryon, he's had some pretty traumatic, and these are only a few things that he's actually told us, so I can only imagine things he hasn't told us.
Well, I think he's a fellow who's had anyone who's bipolar is going to have difficulties functioning and adjusting. And in fact, in high school, he was basically discharged, dismissed from the high school, and not allowed to continue. He was getting in fights with people. He'd be acting out. You know, bipolar people often will range from real passivity to very real aggression. And so he was having a lot of adjustment problems. He got in trouble in the community with the police at different times. So he's somebody that really needs to be medicated, to be regulated, to allow him to conform his behavior.
After I did my 12 months, I thought I was going to come home, and I went to court, and they ended up giving me another 12 months because of numerous write-ups I had and just petty stuff, fights, stealing, failing urine screens. And what did it, they actually sent me to another limited secure facility. They didn't want me at the one I was at anymore. And while I was at this other place in Rochester, me and this kid broke into the staff office. Make a long story short, I got arrested for that. I went to Monroe County Jail, and OCFS still had custody of me. At this time, I was like 16.
Yeah, he's overdosed, drugs, street pills that he got from parents of friends of, you know, where anything he could find. Yeah, he's tried a couple of times. And thank God he hasn't succeeded, and hopefully he'll never go that down that low again. It's pretty severe.
Like a lot of kids, he wanted to do something with his life. He didn't want to just sweep out Kmarts at night. You know, he wanted to do something. They told him, the recruiter told him, oh, there's training for you. Why, you can be this. Maybe you can get medical corps training. Maybe you can do computers. And the Air Force says, maybe you'll be a pilot someday. They tell people, kids, all kinds of stuff, you know.
I was just excited at the time. Like I said, I was thinking about something new, and I seen this as my outing to get out of here, away from things, make some money, stay out of trouble. Go to college and whatnot. And they, you know, there was all these things they were putting on the table, bonuses and.
That's not even legal. That's what I'm understanding.
But I think he thought maybe the Army would turn his life around because they promised him a bonus, they promised he would do this, and Joey was so thrilled about it that he thought, you know, this is what I could do. This could change my life around.
Almost give up on thinking that you're ever going to get out because it just feels like this is it, you know. It's like they're never going to let me out. Every time I go to court, I get extended. But about halfway through my time at Tryon, I went there when I was 16, and when I turned 17 in Tryon, and that's when I realized I wanted to change my life around.
I met him, and you know, and he did, you know, tell me that this would help Joey. If you want to go to college, we'll pay for that. There's a $20,000 sign up bonus.
Joey didn't know. That wasn't on the table for Joe. There was no bonus on the table.
Yeah, he never got nothing. It was like, here you go.
It wasn't even an offer because of his history. They promised him a college education.
And they didn't give him that neither.
He didn't stay in.
I was assigned to be an infantry soldier in the Army. And which is potentially like one of the most dangerous jobs in the military. So you would think that, you know, hopefully you'd get a bonus, but I didn't get a bonus, which I was hoping I was gonna get one. That was one of the big reasons I joined. You see it on the commercials all the time and ads and recruiting centers. They're handing out all these big bonuses. And I'm not gonna say that people haven't gotten bonuses because I've seen some people that have gotten bonuses, but I've also seen a lot of people like myself that didn't receive any bonuses or, so, you know, that was kind of I was kind of mad about that.
I mean, $20,000 sounds great. You know, a kid being 18 years old is going to say, yeah.
Sounds good to anyone.
Yeah, exactly. And that sort of conned them into it. But once those recruiters get your signature, they have nothing to do with you no more. You know, they don't care if you go overseas. They don't care if you get this or get that. Or,
well, that's what they want.
I mean, I don't think they care, you know.
You know, you ain't going to go into your first sergeant's office and say, hey, you know, it's not working out for me anymore. You know, you guys promised me this and this and this, and I haven't got any of that. They don't care. You know, at that point, you're their property. They can do whatever they want with you.
The fact is, there are a lot of crappy jobs in all the services, and that's what most people end up in, but they will recruit you promising something that sounds good. So I think Joey was a good-hearted kid. I think he went in good faith. He thought maybe he could handle it. His mother told me that she was very against it, but apparently the father was for it.
Once he did get in the Army, I mean, they just lied so much to him, you know, so many promises. And he was let down so many times growing up, you know, even getting out of Tryon, you know, the prison. He went to court, and we thought he was coming home. The judge gave him another year. So he's been, just about all of his life, disappointed on what's been going on, because he's
What was your response? My response was that when Joey told us he was enlisting, wasn't good. I didn't agree. Gut feeling, just the wrong decision, period. He could go to community college, he can get a job, too many other things he could be doing, or should be doing, because I know he, you know, isn't fit for service, personally.
Well, he began to break down, and remember, he was in the process of going through basic training at the time, and so it was very severe for him, and I think he had some really terrible experiences mentally, and at the end of basic, he told his family that he was not going to be able to continue in the military, that he just would not be able to handle the stressors of it.
At that time, I knew that I wasn't going to return. I didn't tell my parents. When we graduated, we had a two-week little leave thing before we had to report to our duty station. And the day I was supposed to report, my parents were like, you know, hey, you're getting ready to go, and I was like, I'm not going back, pretty much, and it was an argument. You know, we knew I was going to be in trouble. We knew it was, I knew it was against the military law, but at the same time, you know, with all the anxiety I had, all the depression built up, all the anger built up, I wasn't even thinking about the repercussions, what could happen, what will happen. That wasn't even playing in my mind.
I knew things were going wrong. He, over the phone, when he was able to finally call home and we could actually talk, and he told me that, he asked me not to tell Dad, just don't say anything to Dad, but things aren't going so good. You know, make sure you're here for my graduation. He was very adamant, and of course we're gonna be there. You know, and we were there, we got there. And the minute we got there, we got to the ceremony. It's a beautiful ceremony. I mean, it's a gut-wrenching, tear-jerking ceremony. And once we got back to the motel and we were in the parking lot, you were up in the room loading stuff in, bringing stuff in, and Joey got me outside by the car. The look of terror in his eyes I can't describe it, but I can taste his fear, and he said, I'm never going back. I'm never coming back.
He went back to Fort Drum after basic training. He realized he could not endure it. He had a breakdown. He went into the civilian hospital there. Then he went AWOL. He was gone for over a year. The military didn't do much to search for him. They probably sent a couple letters, that was all. And so he's driving his car one night, and he stopped. This is very common. And the sheriff puts into the FBI crime computer the fact that he is a fugitive from the Army. And so he takes him in custody. And they take him, and then the Army comes and takes him back to Fort Drum.
Well, I got pulled over driving a buddy home with a headlight out. And that's when they, you know, I had a warrant out. They took me to county jail. They let the Army know. The Army came down and picked me up a few days later. And I told them that I take medication. It took them roughly more than a week to get me my meds, which was pretty rough on the anxiety. And when I got there, they told me that they were just gonna, I believe they said they were just gonna have me out of there, boot me out in like 30 days. That never happened.
That's when he had another breakdown and he ended up at the mental hospital in Buffalo. All right. So now he's back at the base and they're saying that they think he should be court-martialed because he was AWOL. My explanation of that, most people would look at this and they'd say, my Lord, a guy as sick as he is, bipolar since 14, whoo, that's really a sick person. That's a very ill person. How could they possibly justify criminalizing that conduct?
It just didn't make, just didn't, like, sort of, it fell apart quick for me, real quick. During basic was, you know, when I was like, you know, I just, they didn't get into my head with a lot of the stuff they try to put in the people's heads, and they didn't affect me one bit. I just, my anxiety started kicking in, the depression of, like, the reality that, like, wow, I'm stuck here for the next 3 years. And then that, like, rebellion side of me started coming across again, and the anger issues from my past, like I felt like I had that all back, and I was just like, whatever, you know, what's a contract? It's a piece of paper. I'll just leave. What are they going to do to me?
The answer is, my opinion, is that there are many people up at Fort Drum that would like to go AWOL if they thought they could get out with a general discharge or a medical discharge, who feel the stressors just like Joey. They don't have Joey's condition, but they have other conditions. And so the military is very concerned. Right now they're deploying a whole brigade from up there to Afghan, right now, this month, March. So they are very concerned about not appearing lenient. And so I explained this to Joey and his family because they really thought he'll be separated. Of course he'll be separated. He's sick. And I said, no, he won't necessarily be separated because they need to show, shall we say, the fist with these guys. You can't walk off this base, let your buddies down, not go back, not deploy. That's not acceptable. If you do, we will take a fist to you and you will be court-martialed and put in jail, and at the very least you'll receive another honorable discharge, which will bar you from any benefits as a veteran. And that's a policy decision on their part to show a policy of sternness and no leniency.
He was 17 talking to a recruiter. We had our problems because he was rebellious. Yeah, I would have done anything to make a change. But I couldn't do it at the time because, especially turning 18, you can't tell me what to do. You don't ruin my life. You're going to ruin my life. My life's been ruined enough. I couldn't do it. I didn't have the strength at that time, but boy, I would now if I could go back. Yep, I would have called everybody. But I was too afraid to ruin, you know, as a parent and as a child, he thinks I'm, you know, you're out to ruin him. You're going to ruin my life. That's the only chance I have. That's what he thought. And I kept telling him as he was going through it, you know, you're walking on eggshells with a kid like Joe at that time. Because we have a history. You know, it's huge. We're close. You know, we're really close. But we're also, you know, there was the rebellion. And he's not afraid to end up in trouble. So I didn't want to make waves and be the one to ruin his life. And that's what he would have seen me as. Well, you ruined my life. You ruined my chances.
It was just a big mess. I'm glad it's all over with. For my case, I know there's a lot of guys in there that are still suffering and still hanging in there. And I just hope that they still hang in there and, you know, things get taken care of pretty much immediately for guys like that, because no parent wants to get a phone call saying that their 18 or 19-year-old son has committed suicide or he's in the hospital on a suicide attempt because, you know, all these problems, and they're coming from the military. That's why they're doing it, obviously, you know, if guys that don't want to be there and they're unable to go home. I'm almost 22 now, and I'm just now thinking about maybe going to starting at a community college. You know, what if I would have done that back when I was 17, 18 out of high school? I could have been almost done with it by now. And now I'm just thinking about starting.